last episode we finished, well, the last two episodes was about treasure hunting. To continue in the mood of inspiration, we are going to talk about how to fill that library up.
Okay.
And we're going to do this by talking about jumping genres.
What's the difference between this one and the others?
So what we're discussing is why it is a good idea to go from genre to genre and try different things.
Okay.
Even though, like, let's say you're inclined to fantasy. Why should you read a biography? Mm. Or let's say you are into nothing but chick lit. Why should you read war dramas?
That's a pretty good point. All right, I'll bite.
Okay. So what are your three genres that you go through?
Main three genres for me are, I think one is fantasy, and I don't usually dabble in high fantasy. I just go with just regular fantasy. Basically, I don't deal with, like, mages and orcs as hard as I should, as opposed to, you know, let's say, maybe angels and demons in, like, you know, New York or underground London.
Okay.
I'm not sure if that makes any sense.
So paranormal?
Yeah, pretty much. More paranormal stuff. I mean, I know that Neil Gaiman is dark fantasy, so I'm not sure if he's actually part of the high fantasy that people consider within that genre.
Hmm.
Second would be definitely a lot of adventure novels. Again, Arturo Perez Reverte. It's a lot of swashbuckling, a lot of mystery, and a lot of murder here and there. And last but not least, I like, you know, true crime kind of ordeal.
Okay.
So I enjoy those. I mean, probably my fourth, if I could add a fourth, is poetry. You know, huge fan of Keats. I love to dabble in, like, I guess, early English stuff.
Okay.
What about you?
So if I had to pick three, it would probably be classics, historical, and then biography, or I guess life story, because biography, memoir.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, that would probably be my three.
You mentioned classics. Were you doing that before your profession or after your profession?
I think I've always done it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it just, I guess, what's the list there? Because that's a pretty broad range. What are classics?
So I cheated a little and I sort of just said as broad as possible so I could fit everything
Okay. Never mind
that. All right. Let's see.
Are you more about, like, the dystopians? Are you more into action, drama? Like, what is that?
So, I would have to say probably in the gothic genre of classics, which is so funny because I can't really seem to bring myself into most modern gothic writing.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are, you know, gothic writings, like?
I really couldn't bring myself into... I'm trying to finish Night Circus right now. I think I have about 20, 30 pages left.
Right.
I can't get into it.
Okay.
It is, to me, like, the epitome of gothic fantasy.
Oh, okay.
It's, I mean, hello, it's a black and white gothic dark circus about this weird game where, in the end, I probably shouldn't spoil it, but in the end, a lot of bad things happen. I'll just say right. So, it doesn't get any more gothic than that. I mean, even the fans of this circus wear red, so you have black, white, and red as this entire color scheme, and everybody's an edgelord.
Is it more like, I guess, Interview with a Vampire, or is it more of, like, Dr. Parnassus
kind of? It's like Dr. Parnassus, but with, like, I would honestly say it reminds me so much of the Scene Movement.
Oh, okay.
Like, I'm actually quite impressed that they don't sell merch at Hot Topic.
Oh my gosh.
It's that kind of genre.
When I think scene books, I actually I don't know why I thought about this. I always think of Christopher Moore. You know that book he wrote, Bite Me?
Okay, I always thought he was a hipster.
Okay, that makes sense.
If I had to create a character, like, to explain Christopher Moore's personality, do you remember the fiancé from Midnight at Paris?
Yes.
That is who I think Christopher Moore is.
Oh, but he's such a versatile, like, writer. Like,
Yeah, no, don't get me wrong. He's like a really great writer. It's just every time I see that character, I'm like, is that Christopher Moore?
Guys, really try him out if you haven't yet.
Start with Sacre Bleu. He
Sacre
was
Bleu!
on the recommendations on the Daydreamer
Yes.
book.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant stuff.
Yeah, he's wonderful. Okay, so we went on a little tangent, but that's okay. Two articles I have for you. One is from this group called the Fussy Librarian, and they are basically a newsletter service that you can sign up to where they give you recommendations, like specifically tailored to your style of reading. Which I think is ironic because they wrote this huge article over calling that they entitled Mixing It Up: The Importance of Reading Different Genres. It's created by Sadie Scott Hainscheck. And then we have the other one, which is from the Writing Cooperative, which I thought would be an interesting, I guess, complimentary article. It's much shorter than the other one. It's written by Brian Yee. He is based in Sydney, Australia. And the Writing Cooperative is just basically a community of writers learning to write better and supporting
Oh,
each other.
that's wonderful.
And they talk about the power of reading books from different genres for a writer.
Brilliant.
So I'm just going to touch lightly on these different points. I have like three major points, and I guess go from there.
All
See
right.
if we agree, disagree, if there's anything we can add to that. I mean, we've both played on both fences in terms of writing and reading. So, yeah.
All right, let's shoot.
So, the main thing they have in common is they talk about the benefits. And one of the main benefits is actually exploring different genres actually allows you to go on, I guess, a quest or an adventure. It
Okay.
allows you to try different things, but it allows you to improve your vocabulary.
I could see that.
And on top of that, as a writer, it allows you to study different styles and improve your writing by trying different styles of writing, by understanding them in different genres.
That's interesting, because that's actually why Hemingway always stands out to me. Because he was known for his, like, one-syllabic sentences. I'm like, wait, what? And that's kind of where, like, I guess this style, the American style writing, is kind of stereotyped off of. Which is really sad because I feel like Mark Twain is better as a American style, like, model. But even rereading American Gods right now, I'm getting the Hemingway vibe. So,
That's cool.
yeah.
I'm like trying to think, because the only thing I've read from Hemingway is Farewell to Arms.
Ugh, Old Man and the Sea.
I haven't read it,
Well, be
but
happy you haven't. Ugh, just
I
hurts.
felt like Farewell to Arms was so modern in a way, because it
Well,
was literally like, I guess the sub premise was he was just trying to get a girl to like him.
yeah.
And he just did it in such a casual way. And you're so used to like almost that formal desire.
Oh,
But it was
yeah.
just this very like, hey, how's it going? Would you like to go out?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, the writing style that you're talking about, like try to actually pick up a little here and a little there, that's, you know.
I mean, as a writer, is there like, let's say, an author that you would try to portray,
Portrayed
like
emanate.
style-wise?
I wish I could write like Oscar Wilde, to be honest.
Okay.
But of course, that's so much. There's so much charm to the way he writes and so much wit that I don't think an American audience would actually enjoy it as much. Especially what he was a Victorian writer. So, I mean, I love the fact that he did write plays and he wrote a book. And though like his portfolio is pretty short, you know, I'd love to capture that. I would love to. What about you though?
So, someone I really admire in terms of writing style would probably be Cornelia Funke. I just her and Kate DiCamillo. I don't know, like I'm a total junkie for children's books. And I felt like previous recession there was just this surgence in the children book writing, like almost a renaissance. I mean, Snicket came out. Funk came out. Gaiman released Stardust then.
Was it?
Yeah, Kate DiCamillo released her books. There was like a bunch of other things that was released, but Hugo
Coraline.
Cabret, Coraline. I mean, it was just this renaissance of. There was a point where even R.L. Stine came out of retirement, if I remember, and it was during that time.
Yeah, I know that that's why I guess Hugo the movie was kind of made, because it was that renaissance. He like they you know, Scorsese needed to touch
Yeah,
that
and then
exact group.
Ian Coffer. I'm probably always gonna mispronounce his name, but the
Okay.
Artemis Fowl series was written at that time. What else was there? Oh, Spiderwick Chronicles happened. I mean, there was just so much heavy duty, like really
Writing,
good writing.
What was there, like the Mother Tiger that you actually read at one point?
Oh yeah, that was a Kate DiCamillo. Something about like the caged tiger. That was so profound too. Who else was there? Well, either way, it was just this huge renaissance. And at that time I was playing with my writing. I mean, we had just finished writing our first play, Project Italy. We had just barely finished Nocturnal Notes. So then I wanted to dive into writing. And I just fell in love with it. I felt like, I don't know, like I grew up with Charlotte's Web and all these, like, you know, The Giving Tree and all that. But the new forms of writing, it was really made for kids to just sink their teeth into it and read. You know, it wasn't like we always joke about this. It wasn't like the Boxcar Kids or the Babysitter's Club. I mean, it was almost this, like, modern expansive universe. I don't know.
No, I
Modern
get it.
universe.
Yeah. I remember even like trying to reach Neil Gaiman himself on Twitter and asking him a question about that. And he was just so bombarded with fans that I'm pretty sure it was like a mediocre question that didn't need to be answered, but it was weird to actually see him even on that list, you know, because I'm used to him like writing comic books or, you know, these other dark fantasy novels.
Yeah, and then at the time, I mean, I think Rowling really brought that reading culture back to life. Like, I think we were in the middle of the Harry Potter novels, and then what else happened around that time? Oh my God, it was on the top of my. Oh, Twilight. Twilight was huge
But that was
around
more
that
like
time.
young adult
Yeah, but
though.
still, just that interest in books around that time, and that's. I'm not gonna lie, like, I became a voracious reader roughly around that time.
Well, good timing, 'cause that was really good writing for everybody for some reason. I myself wouldn't, I guess, aspire to that level personally. I guess I think market-wise, 'cause even till now, like Frost is actually being bought, you know, at like regular bookstores. And personally, I felt like it was just gonna be a fad. You know? Like everybody was in there. Everybody. I mean, at one point, I think even Stephen King, I think Stephen King got in it.
I think he did write a few children's books, now that I think about it, right?
Yeah, that's why I felt like it was a fad.
Oh, and that was another thing because, I mean, I was in school at the time and I was studying corporate identity by then. I had to learn to read annual reports, so I thought, hey, I'll creep over and read Disney's annual report. And holy cow, like at that year, I forgot what year, I think it might have been like 10, 2010, 2012, around there. But 30% of their investment money went into publishing books. And they had the Starcatcher series and the Neverland books. Again, one of the Neverland books ended up on the reading list for Daydreamer.
True.
Yeah, I just like it was just this phenomenal time.
Yeah, that is true. Very
Yeah.
true. I feel like you have to try harder when you write for children's books
Yeah.
because there's a lot of sensory that you actually go through in those novels.
Yeah. I mean, you remember when we co-wrote, we made sure to never have profanity in our writing
Oh,
because
that's so hard.
I wanted it to be, you know, like
Pure.
I wanted it to be pure and I wanted to make sure that the point was brought across without cursing.
Exactly. Yeah.
So.
When you actually go through a majority of Barnes and Nobles, you start realizing a trend in the writing style. Like, young adults, there has to be like a shocking ordeal. Or like in the adults section, depending on fantasy or mystery, the language kind of like, I don't know, it changes. I mean,
Right.
you notice that?
Right. Yeah. No, I do. But I think that's what this article's talking about is when you read all these different genres, you notice almost that pattern.
Yeah.
Like, for example, we were talking about high fantasy. I mean, how hyper aesthetic is high fantasy? I mean, this is I'm probably gonna be like seared for this, but it kind of reminds me of just the end goal of porn.
Ooh.
Like, you know, everything just needs to be this like high stage production, hyper aesthetic.
That's rough.
I
Yeah.
mean, I don't mean it in a rough way because in a way it is an art form.
It
If you think
is.
about it, like you
Yeah.
just have this hyper aesthetic of everything, hyper staged.
True.
Okay, like let's see. What's another hyper aesthetic kind of industry? What about wrestling?
Yeah.
Like that performance piece, you
Right.
know? It feels like that with high fantasy.
Okay. I can level with that. I can level with
Okay.
that. I mean, like, when you're in wrestling, obviously you have to show some macho bravado, you have to gloat, and you have to, get the crowd going
Yeah.
for that, I guess, male burlesque performance.
Yeah, but you understand then that it's this high aesthetic valued piece of writing that high
Exactly.
fantasy is.
Right. So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, versus, I don't know, self-help books.
Yeah, I'm so weirded out by self-help books because sometimes the books come out as very generic writing pieces. And I feel like they're only written because people, don't get to hear it from somebody else. Because half of the stuff that you read, it's like a no-brainer. Like, of course you could earn money by just like investing in something. Of course you could take care of your health just by jogging. But when you need affirmation and you live a lifestyle where you're too independent, I feel, because there are people like that. They're so independent they don't have friends, that you need books like that. Because, maybe people don't relate to where you are. You might actually be like an executive at some high office, or you might actually be working in a foreign country, and people around you just don't relate to what you're going
Right.
through. So.
So, interesting you brought that up because some of the points they were bringing up. Not only are you exploring different styles, but you're also creating more of a social awareness. Like you just become more well informed of, like, let's say, global affairs or historical affairs. I mean, who doesn't right. like that. But it also broadens your perspective.
Okay.
When it comes to stressing the importance of reading different genres, the fact that doing so can broaden your perspective of the world in arguably the most noteworthy point of them all, says the fussy librarian. And then to segue into that, I just wanted to bring it up since you brought up Hemingway.
Mm-hmm.
But from the Writing Cooperative, he mentions in 1934, Arnold Samuelson, who was a war writing novelist,
right.
Showed up at Ernest Hemingway's door and begged him for advice. I'm assuming some form of mentorship for writing.
Right.
One of the tasks that Hemingway gave Samuelson was to read all the books on a long list of classic novels, and his answer was he told him that reading stories from various authors would teach him about production of different stories.
Interesting. When you began writing, I mean, where did you start?
So, I honestly thought I was the most amazing writer in the world. And of course I learned the hard way that I wasn't. But I find myself just writing the same story over and over.
Right.
Because I'm just getting better at writing because I'm reading more. A good example was, I mean, it's been a personal baby of ours, is Nocturnal Notes. Which, by the way, T. Hontiers, I'm sure you've noticed I've said Nocturnal Notes a few times. Yes, there is a T named Nocturnal Notes. And yes, it is named after
our play,
which we world premiered in 2007.
Was it in Burbank?
It was in it was on NoHo Arts District.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
And it's done a few debuts since then. I mean, we performed at Lit Fest.
Pasadena.
We did a few shorts from Nocturnal Notes. And then we started a blog on Nocturnal Notes.
Yeah.
We wanted to turn it into a radio drama. If that's something you guys are interested in, we'd love to write it for you. I actually am in the process of editing a novel of Nocturnal Notes. It's actually finished. But I am editing it now. And it's actually written in the style, since we're talking about reading different genres, of Dracula.
Oh.
I didn't know how much I loved the writing style of Bram Stoker until I read Dracula. I just love the idea of piecing everything together, you know, figuring it out through journal entries and diaries and confessionals. So the entire book is written in that style. Except instead of vampires, I'm writing about a really messy love triangle loosely based off of the King Arthur tales set in art bougie LA. During what? Like,
it's supposed to be 90s or early 2000s.
Yeah, 90s, early 2000s.
Somewhere there.
Yeah. Post-recession.
There you go.
Or pre-recession. Okay. Sorry, pre-recession, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, either way, I mean, it's interesting.
Okay.
But where was I going with that?
How did you get started as a writer in improving? How's that? How did you improve?
Well, ironically, going back to the subject that we're talking about, reading way different genres that I would expect.
Okay.
Not playing it safe. I mean, some of my favorite books are, like, dollar bin books.
That's fun.
I mean, has anyone ever picked up a dollar bin book that was, like, a total win? Did you?
Yeah, actually. I think Julia at one point.
Okay, I found that at the dollar store, people.
Okay.
And that was an amazing read. I've also found, get this, Prisoner of Heaven at the Dollar Tree.
I was so impressed by that. I'm like, what?
Mm-hmm.
Guys, if you're into Count of Monte Cristo, try
this. It is a total homage to it.
Yes.
And it is part of the Cemetery of Forgotten Books series by Zaphon. Which, Shadow of the Wind, is actually the second book.
Mm.
So it goes Angels, Game, Shadows of the Wind, and Prisoner of Heaven.
Okay.
I think there's one more. No, I think that's a part of the Rose Fire series. But they all connect with each other.
Okay.
That's the crazy thing.
And getting used to the whole Spanish culture on that. Like, was it like 19th century or 18th century on that one?
I think it's like World War One.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So it's...
Yeah.
Got it.
20th. It's really good.
Okay.
So, highly recommend. But... Oh, and since we were on that subject, if you guys have a Dollar Tree near you, I don't know what nonprofit does it. Maybe you can do the research, but there was like this thing passed where to educate people or to give people access to good books, they would actually reprint bestsellers and put them in dollar stores. So don't go past your dollar store without looking at the book section, really. You'd be really impressed what you find sometimes.
So, next.
Yeah, apart from it just making things better, they also say you can discover a new favorite genre. I think that that would go with my memoir love. Because I picked up Julia Child out of a library. What is it? Those little libraries?
Yeah, the neighborhood, like, library boxes that everybody set up.
Yeah, I picked it up from there.
Yeah.
Take a chance, right?
Yeah, exactly.
What else can I mention? Oh, you can get inspiration from surprising places.
Places, like or actual locations?
Types of books.
Types of books.
Like new books. Like, here's a good example. What made you branch beyond fantasy? What was your inspiration, and what book kind of made you want to dive into a genre that you never thought you'd be into?
Well, HBO and Stars kept producing these books that seemed to be, like, selling well, and one of them was Dexter.
Hmm.
And that was kind of my gateway into what I call dude books.
So, Dexter was your gateway drug into...
Yeah, like... It got me to read manly books.
Okay.
You know, about serial killers or, like, spies or people that just like to beat the crap out of everybody.
So tell me about what do you like about it?
Yeah, it starts off with you getting into what Dexter is like. Mm-hmm. And soon you find yourself, like, you know, reading these scenes of him killing people and how he does it and just the thrill that you actually get to venture into with Dexter. And with that happening, I started to be interested, like, okay, what other books might actually have, like, this kind of thrill? And obviously I went to action type novels like Jack Reacher and Jason Bourne, and it's just a lot of fun. I didn't expect myself to enjoy it. Like, I thought I would have to, like, take a shower and, like, you know, just clean myself off. Like, ew, oh my god. It's so much, like, testosterone. Because, like, I love, you know, I love poetry. I've mentioned before, I've read Alexandre Dumas. Or Dumas, my apologies. Mm-hmm. It's French. And, you know, just adventure-type stuff. But when you get into these books about, like, guys explaining their trauma, their feelings, and this twisted idea of chivalry that they have, you can't help but root for these heroes.
Hmm.
Yeah. So that was one, you know, uncomfortable experience.
But yeah. But now here you are.
Fun. Yes, love it.
I remember when you picked up Mafia Princess. I mean, we talked about it nonstop in the first episode, but...
Okay, the true crime stuff I was always into is just my parents were kind of like, no, most of the time. You know, I've picked up Mafia Princess when I was, like, I think in high school, and I've devoured it. Like, half of it is legal stuff, and the rest is literally her talking about her life.
Right.
And, I've picked up other books, as I've mentioned on the first episode, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And they're great. They're fun because to me, I always want to learn about like what makes a person do that? What makes a person, I guess want these things, even though it's illegal, you know? And I never really put these action novels, these dude books, with the actual true crime stuff, because true crime, they're analytical, You care so much about what the criminal mind actually has to say and why they actually went that far, as opposed to, I don't know, like Jason Bourne waking up one day and realizing he's an assassin. Did not know that. Gonna have to go through the first novel for that one. And then all of a sudden, like, you find out his.
No spoilers.
Ah! Sorry.
Yeah,
And just, it's just fun when you read these action novels.
okay.
They're. I can't say they're childish, but they're childish. It's like my Harley Quinn type novels, Those are my Harley Quinns.
You should explain what a Harley Quinn is,
Okay.
because I'm sure everyone's thinking about Batman
Are
and.
you serious? No.
Okay.
Harley Quinn novels are those novels that you pick up at Vaughn's. Like they're just stacked like these really chunky like romance novels.
Basically, the general picture where it's picturesquely painted men with their shirts open and a woman touching their chest.
With their
Okay.
like unstoppable abs, you can't count. The ordeal about Harlequin novels is they're known for being the publishing company that literally just changes the person's name and the location and basically a lot of the nouns and just keeping the exact same story in every book.
Wow, that's
It's junk,
crazy.
but it's candy for some people, It's to me, that's what I call a junk reader, and I am like terrified that I am one now.
So, on that subject, for everyone out there that follows bibliosinensis.com, we have a lot of little extra goodies on top of the podcasts, right?
Right.
So Eugene's written an article over good readers, bad writers, which is this complex, this conundrum, catch 22 of liking very unpopular.
No, liking very popular bad writers,
Okay.
but you can't help but read them.
Okay.
That's, oh, God. Nicholas Sparks, and Anne Rice. Two different genres. A lot of people consider their writing style bad or primitive, but they are such good storytellers that you just can't help but continue. I remember working at a bookshop before and had a customer come by and confess to me that she'd cry. That she had cried in an airplane while they're in the air. Obviously, you're supposed to turn off your stuff. And it was a Nicholas Sparks book. And she was like, I don't know why she was confessing this to me. I felt like maybe she finally found another reader and understood where she was. And I'm like, I've never read Nicholas Sparks, but it sounds like Anne Rice. Like the vampire Lestat carrying a mace and bring his mastiff to like take on wolves. When obviously he's in like, the Georgian era, where they have guns, and he's in the snow taking on wolves with medieval weapons because, oh my gosh, he's so cool that way. I felt like I was watching like, I don't know, Dragonheart or Power Rangers.
Power Rangers. I could see that
I'm like,
actually.
oh my God, but I want to keep reading. So there's that. Check it
Okay.
out, bibliosinensis.com.
There you go. So, since we got that all out of our system, we're going to continue forward on the last half of this podcast. with ways to add variety to your reading list.
Ooh.
So let's see if we agree with any of these or if we can add suggestions to this. Last episode, we were talking about where to collect books and the treasure hunting aspect of the books. But this is more of how to break that, I guess, that ritual.
Right.
And add some, I guess, some spice to your bookshelf life.
Oh, my.
Okay, so one thing they suggest is try to incorporate one new type of book at a time. The more drastic the change, the less likely you will stick with it.
Interesting.
Do you agree or disagree?
I completely agree. I've actually done marketing for books on Amazon at one point. You can actually follow the trend over what genres people will actually skip to.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of weird because they change their palettes like almost every season, if not every month. They'll go from like, I guess, LGBTQ vampires all the way to like, how was this, I guess, memoirs of a geisha.
Mm-hmm.
And then find yourself, like, find them, like, I guess the next month or next season reading Nancy Drew. And I guess you could see the pattern that on that way, on that wave right there.
Okay.
But it's kind of like that, you know? And when you actually start following them where they're going, you can kind of forecast. What I can't explain is how they get there.
Hmm.
And I have a hard time jumping from one genre to the next sometimes.
So the next point they brought up, which is something I definitely do, is don't be afraid to read multiple books at once, like our first episode. It may be easier to alternate between a new find and an old favorite.
Oh, okay. An alternative to a favorite?
Yeah, basically your new book. Oh. Like your new genre that you're just dipping your toes into.
That's true. Okay. I mean, do you find yourself actually getting into that?
So right now, I don't know if anyone uses Goodreads. I love using Goodreads. It's the library to my psychotic book collection-ness. Mm-hmm. But I always have like 5 currently readings at least. And I have books that I've been reading for years on end. And I just kind of promise myself that I'm going to finish that book this year. It may not be a book that I'm gung-ho good at, but it's familiar. Like right now, mine would be Masters of Margarita. And it's been on my list for a few years now. Because it's huge and it's surreal. Again, surreal Russian politics.
Right.
Very bizarre. But I'll definitely, like, if I need a breather, I'll definitely go back to reading Masters of Margarita.
Okay. I must say, like, I never actually thought myself as somebody that would love essays.
Mm-hmm.
Wallace Shawn, his essays. If you guys know him better as the guy from...
Oh! Uh-huh.
Princess Bride, you know, inconceivable!
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
He's an essayist, folks.
Yeah. And his book about, like, his reaction during 9/11 has been, like, my fave. Like, anytime I have a stressful day, I run to that book.
Hmm.
I mean, he has one where he talks about why we love going to restaurants. You know, the privilege you feel when you get served. I'm like, that sounds sinful and I like it. You know, I'm not weird for actually liking that.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you just don't feel alone when you read it?
Yeah, that's what it feels like whenever I read it. You know, it's so human.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not, like, hiding anything from you, and he's willing to actually exploit himself to, you know, express the issue that we have as a society. Like, come on, guys, of course we're doing this. It's basically what it is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I used to actually fall back on Robin Hood and King Arthur when I was in high school. And the ordeal was I didn't realize that there were so many versions of those books.
Mm.
Robin Hood itself has gone through like 4 different...
Facelifts?
Yeah,
Facelifts is probably the best way to describe that.
Yeah, Maid Marian was not as like, you know, I wasn't a high, I didn't hold a high office in the original books. Let's just say
That's
that.
very polite of you.
Yes. So, I guess that's kind of why I have that book. That's, but in collecting, my go-to has been like Beowulf
Right.
and obviously Neil Gaiman. Beowulf, on the other hand, was kind of strange for me because I really wasn't into it in high school. But when you actually start reading the essays and the study behind the whole book, and that there was a Christian version and there was the original version, and all of a sudden, like, you read that Tolkien had his own version, like, whoa, okay,
Right.
suddenly there was a world. But, you know.
Right. So the next one they bring up is ask friends, family members, and coworkers for recommendations. They may prefer books that you wouldn't normally go for.
I know till this day I haven't read Paulo Coelho's Alchemist.
Which is so funny because how many people just assume that you're the kind of guy that
They
has.
always give
And
me
they
the
always
book.
give Eugene
I have
the
still haven't read it. I think I have three copies and I feel so terrible.
Oh my
Please
goodness.
forgive me. Please, if you hear this right now, I am so sorry. I just And the thing is, I know about that guy's story, you know? Like, the whole publishing industry was dying. And behind his publisher, he just put it online. And then people at Russia, who, okay, let me tell you, Russia stopped printing books. They stopped doing paper copies of books during that time. So when his book came out, and I think it was still in like Spanish. They read it. They devoured it. They loved it so much that they had to call the, you know, his publisher and said, "We want full printed copies sent over now." And he became like an international bestseller. And if you ever want to hate on BitTorrent, that's one story you could actually put to like the test and let everybody know. That there came a point where piracy was legal, okay? The author himself, who has the right to his own book, got to sell his book without his publisher.
That's insane.
Right? I'm still sorry that I haven't read the book.
No, you're good.
So.
So the next one's actually a really interesting point, which I guess I shouldn't jump into that right away. Let me bring up getting recommendations from other people. I mean, that's how I got Of Love and Other Demons, and like I said, Masters of Margarita right now. What's another one? Have I ever read a book? Oh, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fluff.
Thank you. Well done. That was really popular.
You know, it was just recommended to me, and it was an easy read, but it was kind of a nice comfort.
Wasn't it written by a pickup artist?
Yes.
Okay.
So it's a self-help book by a pickup artist.
Okay.
I totally forgot his name. Let me look it up. So it was written by Mark Manson.
Okay.
And apparently he has another one that I haven't. Oh, he has like a trilogy. Everything is effed. And Go Unfluff Yourself.
Huh. All right.
So there's more to look forward to, but my friend is actually, which is so funny, it was recommended to me by one of my friends, one of my best friends. And then at the time, our roommate is a huge Mark Manson fandom, like boy, I guess fanboy.
Yes.
And he recommended Models to me, which apparently is really eye-opening. I haven't opened it yet. It's actually about understanding how to pick up women or how to date women, knowing that women have complexes about their image.
Yeah.
I
Yeah.
haven't read it yet, but he says it's great on both ends as a woman or as a man to read that book.
Interesting.
But it's on my reading list. And I will let you guys know how it goes once I do dive into it. But I don't think I would normally read this genre.
Yeah.
But the fact that it was recommended to me so many times, and the fact that I think I was able to read it in one afternoon because it's just such a short read.
Yeah.
But I found it just refreshing. It was more of like just a you got this validating sort of feeling.
Okay.
Or just what exactly is important.
Right.
To me. So, I mean, that was a recommendation.
It's wonderful.
Anyways, that was my two cents on that. but moving on, I really like this one. Review the complete works of your favorite writers.
Ooh, yes.
Though authors typically stick to one genre, some branch out. Taking this approach allows you to dip your toe in by reading a different type of work from an author you've already been familiar with. So one I wanted to bring up is Brian Jacobs.
Ooh, yes.
Because Brian Jacobs is infamous for his Redwall series. And that's all fine and well. But he also had like this one, I wouldn't even call it a young adult novel. It was kind of a adventure novel, I guess. Because the theme was way too dark. But it was called The Castaways of the Flying Dutchman.
Yes.
And it's not in the Redwall genre. If you like pirates and curses and stories of death. Runaways and death and all that craziness, you would love this book.
It got a lot of... I felt like there was a lot of philosophical, you know, depth whenever they have their conversations in that book.
Yes. I won't go into detail, but it's about a boy who's, I believe he's mute.
Mm.
I forgot if he was mute or deaf, but because of that, he stows away on the ship and he kind of acts as a double agent because, you know, everyone thinks he's dumb because he can't talk or hear.
Right.
But it takes a total turn. But it's a really fascinating story.
Okay.
I love that. I mean, have you found any interesting genre switches?
Genre switches?
On any of your favorite authors?
Not favorite author. Stephen King actually writes essays.
Oh.
Yeah.
What?
Yes, he does.
Really?
Oh, God. They were actually in my textbooks when I was in high school. We were allowed to read those. Just okay. Not his novels, and he's amazing. Like, he actually gives us an intriguing perspective with old horror from, like, you know, Germany, as opposed to new horror nowadays. And he expresses that Snow White and Cinderella are much more horrific than his own writing.
Okay, can I just say, like, adding to weird things like that, like Guy Min's short stories are my favorite.
But they're not changing genre, though. Are they?
I don't know. I think they're much darker. Have you read Snow Glass Apples?
Yes.
Compared to his other stuff.
I also read Beowulf.
No, I remember Snow Glass Apples, and then there was, like, another one. It was, like, an anthology. It was, like, about this doomsday angel at an airport.
Okay.
And no, it's not Good Omens.
No, it's not. That's not.
It was a short story about, like, this guy that meets a dark angel at an airport.
Right.
But
it's not from Smoke and Mirrors, is it?
It might be. I just know that there's like a short story collection. He has like three stories, but the main one in it is Snow Glass Apples.
Okay. Sorry, like that was the one book he complains about where it's like, everyone bought it. Nobody read it.
Oh no, I read it. Guyman, I read it. Who else is interesting? Oh, okay. So Daniel Handler.
Oh, yes.
Is a good one.
Yes, he is.
Daniel Handler...
Lemony Snicket.
...is Lemony Snicket. Or I should say he is the representative for Lemony Snicket, as he wants to be known.
Yes.
He writes really dark adult, like, stories. Like, he was writing Murder at the Opera with incestuous romances. And his books did not sell for years. And it wasn't until he was approached and asked to write a children's book that he wrote Series of Unfortunate Events. And he did it reluctantly. And now he's famous for that. But
yay!
If you like that sort of dark, I guess, decrepit humor, he really does have a collection of adult books. And if you thought it couldn't get darker.
Yeah, right.
That would be interesting. How about the writers of Peter and the Starcatchers?
Okay, what about them?
They actually started out as sports columnists.
Oh. What?
And a lot of people don't know that.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And they're under different pen names, but yeah, the series of retelling Neverland and Peter Pan's story was written by sports columnists.
That reminds me of, like, the writers for Star Trek, the second generation. Uh-huh. Like, a majority of those people were, like, always popping in between writing novels and writing for the episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just amazing because some of them are actually in that one series you have, the rare one.
Lyavac.
Mm-hmm. You know? And, I don't know, they're just amazing. They just actually, like, it feels like they have no fear over, you know, the written word.
Mm-hmm.
And the creativity that comes out of those are just, like, that just come out of them is just brilliant. I know it's not, like, jumping genres here.
No, but it's just, like, that different formatting.
Yeah. Right? Because I know that's what I know Gaiman for. Like, he goes between film to comic books to novels frequently.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's just, I don't think I know too many that actually jumped from different genres.
Okay.
Too often. I'm sad about that, but yeah.
If we find any more, we'll let everyone know.
I mean, I'll say Poe and Hemingway, yeah? Yeah, I mean, they wrote articles.
Well, what about Oscar Wilde? Didn't he write plays originally?
Yeah, he wrote plays. His Dorian Gray, basically his only novel.
Uh-huh.
And then the giant, I forgot what was the title called. It was the last book he wrote. He wrote it for his kids.
I love his ghost story. I think he must have wrote that for his kids, too.
Ghost story?
Yeah. Oh. What was it called? The Canterly Ghost or something?
Oh, goodness. I don't remember everything.
The Canterville Ghost.
Okay.
Yeah, but I love that story. And I really did feel like that was a children's story.
Yeah.
That it's such a cute story. If anyone's into cute ghost stories. Oh, here's another one. I love this one. Okay. James and the Giant Peach.
Yes.
Rodald.
Yeah.
Willy Wonka.
Yes.
You know where I'm going with this? He used to write for Playboy.
Oh.
He wrote dirty short stories for Playboy, and they are actually really entertaining people. If you can get the collection of Switch Bitch.
Mm.
Am I allowed to say that?
I guess now you can.
If you can get the collection of Switch Bee, we will send that to you on the recommendation
list.
On our, what is it?
On our blog. Just put it on our blog. Because you can only find books that the bookstores have on bookshop.org.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the books that we actually are recommending, it's not finding themselves
there. That's horrible. We'll have to definitely put it on the blog then.
Yeah, because small businesses, they're not like Barnes & Noble where they carry everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know? They're very good at finding lucrative books. So if you want to find, like, really good books, I'm pretty sure these small businesses have it. But obviously not everybody has it.
Yeah.
So.
But I will say, if you're looking for a fun table read book, it is the best in entertainment. It's like really dirty uncle jokes.
Oh.
Yeah, nice. But like in the style of Rodolphe. So if you like Fantastic Mr. Fox, BFG, Willy Wonka, and you just like love that capturing of writing, or Matilda, imagine that for grown-ups.
There you go.
With potty humor. It's great.
Nice.
It's great. I highly recommend it.
Brilliant.
I bet no one would have expected me to be into that, but it's Rodolphe. I don't know how to explain it. It's really good.
It's like seeing Dr. Seuss artwork in like very serious connotations, or like political, used as political cartoons.
Mm.
You know, those three phases of Dr. Seuss.
Yeah.
You know? Like, originally, half the cats that you see on his pages were actually against Nazi propaganda.
And yeah. Then
later on, what, he has his midnight paintings?
Huh.
Very contemplative, very dark, and very, like, morose, like, themes. It's his style. Interesting. You could definitely tell
it's
his style.
You can search it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Midnight paintings.
Good times. Okay, so, two more points. We'll finish this up. Be spontaneous and choose new genres at random. Go to your local library, bookstore, or ebook marketplace and head to a section you wouldn't usually visit. So I did this recently.
Okay.
By total accident.
Go on.
I picked up the Fifth Avenue Storyteller Society.
Yes.
Which is the new book. We were talking about this before.
Yeah.
And it was literally supposed to be about writers creating a club, trying to figure out what they're writing. But it didn't, it like totally turned into a romance. And later it was revealed that it was in the Christian romance genre.
Right.
And that kind of blew my mind. And I'm glad I read it. It was a fun read. But my goodness, I would have never picked it up if I knew.
Yeah.
So, thank you, library, for that recommendation. And then, yeah.
I would have to say the script of Ruby. I did not expect that to be in the Islamic section of religion.
Well, that makes sense.
I didn't know. Like it was a shocker to me because I didn't know anything about the Sikh, you know, the Sikh religion.
Mm-hmm.
But Ruby's amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I guess it went backwards. I mean, the same thing happened with Madame Bovary. Like, you read, like, Victorian Regency stuff, and you want to read drama. And somebody went ahead and said, try Madame Bovary. I'm like, okay. And, like, that was not what I expected. I was expecting, like, to read something like Emma style, or, like a rendition of, like, Queen Elizabeth or something. But no, this girl is, like, running her credit down to the ground. And
yeah.
You can't help but feel horrible for her. It just keeps getting worse.
So, there's one thing that's on my recommendation from the library list that I'm a little scared to read.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, because of what it is, I want to read it.
Oh,
and I'm
boy.
A little horrified.
Right.
So, you know how I'm really into, like, historical readings and, like, behind documentaries or biographies of, like, I guess vintage Hollywood? I just finished reading Fay Wray and Robert Riskin, and we went to the book signing. Huzzah.
Yes.
But guess what was recommended to me? It's actually called Fantan.
Oh, no.
And it's written by Marlon Brando.
Oh, no.
But it's Marlon Brando's, like, I guess, adventure story about an Asian spy. Like a sex bomb Asian female spy.
That must be amazing. That's just glorious, you know?
I am so intrigued to read it, but horrified at the same time.
Send them to the mattress. If they don't like them, go.
Yeah, so, I don't know, guys. What do you think?
Oh, is it gonna be like another Dragon Lady?
Is it gonna be horribly inappropriate? Probably. Oh my goodness. But is it gonna be half decent writing by Marlon Brando? We'll find out. Oh.
Tune in next time.
I know, right? But doesn't it intrigue you?
Yeah.
That for one, he writes, and for two, like, why an Asian sexy female spy?
Yeah. Oh, goodness. Okay, cool. So yeah, we'll see. I have nothing.
I have no words for this.
Yeah, I'm like, all I could think of is there was this one indie film about Irma Vemp, and I was watching on IFC, like, years ago, and one of the characters was complaining that, why did we hire an Asian woman to be Irma Vemp? And I'm just like, I'm feeling that right now. I'm feeling that.
Why is Marlon Brando qualified to write about Asian women?
Yeah, I know, right?
I don't know.
He has experience. Maybe. A lot of experience.
I mean, we'll see.
Okay.
Then it says, is there a genre you tend to disregard? Give it another chance. You may be surprised to find that while you never used to like works under that category, you've developed a newfound appreciation for them.
All right. I am going to get a lot of flack for this one. Nora Roberts.
Are you serious?
I know that she's right there with like Nicholas Sparks, and as much as like they're good writers, or well, at least Nora Roberts is a good writer.
Well, this is probably going to go on your blog post.
Yeah, right? I know. I still disregard it, and I feel insensitive for it. You know, it's like when I read Pride and Prejudice, and I have, like, my own silly opinion about it. Mm-hmm. And it's the unpopular opinion, you know? And help me get into this if you could actually do so. I mean, like, this is why I kind of, like, look at the Harlequin novels, and I kind of, like, smirk and laugh and snicker. And I'm not really doing it because I disregard romance. I love romance. I guess it's just hard for me to let my guard down, you know, swallow my pride, and kind of, you know, see it as a psychology for what some women love to read.
Huh.
You know? Like, I know, like, there are people that read erotica to actually understand women when it comes down to the, I guess, the playing field of picking up girls.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been told many times that if people read more romance novels, that they would actually be better men. That they would understand women better.
Mm.
And I'm just like, I feel insensitive for not really getting into it. I mean, I liked reading Snow Falling on Cedar. That was a very sensitive story, all right? It was, you know, an American actually falling for a Japanese woman before World War II hit, and him getting his heart broken because the woman's mother disapproved, and she had to break up with him and actually marry a Japanese guy.
Did you just spoil it?
No, that's not the spoiler.
Oh, okay.
That is not the spoiler. That is the beginning of the book.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
And, you know, like, this guy's just, the American guy just can't stop loving her. And that was pretty sensitive, I thought. But maybe because I was seeing it as, you know, the whole book was in the man's perspective. Maybe? Please enlighten me. What am I missing?
Okay.
So, what about you?
What's a genre? Oh, I'm a little scared to do it, but I'm gonna try it one day, is Druid, which is horror.
Nice.
I mean, I thought I couldn't handle horror because I'm just really, like, I'm a scaredy cat. I guess you could say I'm sensitive. But I picked up Druid because I thought the plot was super interesting. It's actually about Charles Dickens.
Alright.
So, people don't know this, but there's apparently this theory or this conspiracy around Charles Dickens where he got into this horrific accident. Like, I think mid in his life.
Midlife.
And he went from writing really ingenious, chipper, happy writing to almost this, like, dark, morose sort of writing.
Right.
And the last character he ever wrote about, which everyone thinks is, like, kind of conspiratory and scary, is this character named Druid, who's a Horla, which we talked about with Maupassant. It's basically a vampire that feeds on your emotions. It doesn't feed on blood. And so there's this phantom-esque character named Druid. And they think that something weird, like there was something fishy that happened. But this is kind of the plot for Druid, which is about the demise of the chipper, Charles Dickens.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And I picked it up and I was completely horrified by it. I mean, there was just a point where it, like, the visuals just disgusted me. Like, I didn't think that you could get jump scares and, like, that spook factor from books that a movie would do. Because, you know, think about it. We have the lighting and the sound and the everything. But little did I know, there are jump scares in books. And there are, like, horrific things that stick with you, like horror movies. And I just had to put it down. And I actually gave away the book. But then the plot just lingered in my head. And I told Eugene to get the book back for me. So now it's in my collection. It's been sitting there and I'm still absolutely terrified to read it. But I'm actually pretty intrigued to read it. So I guess the thing to take away from this is trying different things is great.
I'd like to play a little game.
Oh, okay.
Name a genre. Name a book. I'll go first.
Okay.
Sci-fi.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Your turn.
Self-help.
Blink. I believe it was by Maxwell.
Okay.
All right. And let's go for, like, two more. I'll go for one right now. Mystery.
Everything from Miss Franny Fisher's Murder Mysteries by Carrie Greenwood.
Oh.
I just started.
Wow, that was good. Okay, that was good. All right,
your turn. Since we were going for it, Dude Books.
Dude Books. Pick one. Is there beer in hell?
Oh, no!
Oh, that was horrible! Oh, God. I don't know how people stomach that book. Oh, my God.
Hey, now that you recommended it, you have to put it in our reading.
Okay, I have to tell you a story. I read...
No.
No.
Okay.
I have some respect for the man.
Okay.
Because he self-published his books, and he did it all on his own, that when he was actually getting a book deal, hold on, let me look up the publishers. When he was getting the contract from Simon & Schuster, which is one of the big four publishing companies, he demanded to talk to the CEO, and they were like, why do you need to speak to him? And he's like, I am not leaving this room until I speak to the CEO. And finally, the CEO comes in, and he's like, what do you need? And he's like, I need to know how you're distributing my books and why I should even sign up with you. And the confession ends there, but he went ahead and revealed that the publishing companies do not own the distribution companies.
Wow.
And I was like, no, no way. So, like, all those like, books that you get at Vaughn's and, like, Barnes & Noble's or just even, like, your local newsstands, people have access to those. Mm. Everybody has access to those. Mm. And he actually told everybody, you know, start building your own publishing company, guys. Just start building your own company. And I had, like, respect for him for that. It's just, his books are just horrendous. Like, I know that people love them, or rather, dudes love them. Dudes without taste love them. But, yeah, mad props, bro.
Okay.
Sorry, it just, that's the one thing I remember by that guy.
Okay.
And it did make me very uncomfortable.
Okay.
Okay. So, what are we drinking?
Well, since we were talking about trying different things, we are drinking tiki.
And what is tiki?
So, tiki is a blend of two different tea types mixed into one. And it is Tea Spectral Summer Blend.
For those that miss Disneyland, this is basically Dole Whip.
In a tea.
In a tea.
I mean, it's very reminiscent of Dole Whip.
Right. The texture's not there. It's not, you know, like the same feeling.
But it does have a very sweet pineapple-y note.
Yes.
The base is actually a unroasted green rooibos, which is originally what we call red tea in the U.S. It's an herbal. It's a root. We normally take it roasted, which is what people know it for. But this is an unroasted one, so it's a very mellow, I guess, base. And I paired it with a very strong base, which is a Yinhao Jasmine. Nice. And Yinhao Jasmine is a Chinese green tea that's scented with jasmine, the flavor of jasmine, but on top of that, they throw in the rose petals, or not the rose, pardon, the jasmine petals. Mm. So there's lots of jasmine petals, there's calendula petals in this, there's a little hint of spearmint, and of course, the crowning glory of it is the pineapple, accompanied with orange.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So, trying to span different genres, this was probably the, I guess, one of the more eccentric blends of Tea Spectral. I fought so hard for this because I just didn't want a typical basic tropical summer blend.
Yeah.
I wanted something very impactful and memorable, and that's where tiki came from.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it was definitely across a genre for me.
And for some of you guys that are actually hit by warmer climates this time of the year, it's a pretty good iced tea.
Yes, that's another thing. I wanted a tea that would translate excellent as a cold brew, or if you want to go a little more American traditional, a sun tea. But it is excellent, no matter how you put it.
Wonderful. To tiki.
All right, everyone, to tiki. May you continue to read and enjoy reading and books.
Stay cozy.
Stay cozy.